Il-program li ser tisimaw huwa miġjub lilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.
Welcome to University Matters on Campus FM 103.7. I'm Patricia Cavallari, and in this series we shall be hearing from academics about their research and from students and other members of the campus community about the many activities which will be taking place during the coming year. I'm very happy to have with me today on University Matters for Campus FM, Professor Alan Daydorn. Professor Daydorn is not a newcomer to this program. He's come several times. However, I would like to just rush briefly through his bio because I think it's always nice to be reminded where our academics are coming from in that sense. So Professor Daydorn is an associate professor within the Department of Geosciences, so the Faculty of Science here at the university, being primarily trained and with experience as a coastal and marine biologist. He holds a PhD in biology and is recognized as a chartered biologist by the Society of Biology of London. He's published over 60 peer-reviewed papers in several high-profile academic journals on various aspects of coastal and marine biology. He's also currently reading on a part-time basis for a Master's in Marine Spatial Planning at the University of Ulster and is supervising a number of student dissertations at Master and PhD level. He's lectured since 2004 within the International Ocean Governance course organised by the International Ocean Institute in Malta. He's also lectured in biology at various levels since 2003 and has contributed to various university-taught and field courses. The main thematics which interest him are coastal, especially beach and marine ecology, biological oceanography, ecological modelling, remote sensing monitoring of water quality, management, governance and monitoring of marine living resources, ecology of islands, ecology of invasive species, marine protected areas, marine spatial planning and dynamics of jellyfish outbreaks, for which he is quite well known amongst the general public. Since 2001, he has also penned hundreds of popular science articles for various media portals, including newspapers, magazines and journals, and is scientific advisor to a number of local environmental NGOs. In 2011 and 2012 and 14, he was presented with the Environmental Journalism Award for Malta by the Institute of Maltese Journalism. He's also a qualified PADI certified scuba diver and also a keen footballer, though I can't imagine he finds much time for that in his busy schedule.
No, unfortunately.
Welcome to the program.
Thanks for the invitation.
Lovely to have you here again with us, talking about the subject, which is really marine ecology. I mean, it has become such a very interesting subject, a topical subject people are taking to heart and are taking a great interest in. Before we went on air, we spoke about how we might divide up our rather short 28 minutes. And so let's kick off immediately with some of the collaborative projects which you're working on. These are very important because obviously it's Malta and other people and learning from all sides.
Exactly. University, as you rightly hinted, is participating in a lot of these collaborative projects. If I'm not mistaken, there's over 100 in which the university is participating. Our research unit, basically within the Department of Geosciences, is participating in a number of these. And today, in this short program, I'll mention briefly a number of these, which I'll focus on those programs, on those projects which are ongoing, because some of them have already terminated, so I'll focus only on those which are ongoing. Probably the one which is best known by the public is Medjelerisk. Medjelerisk has been ongoing for almost 3 years now, so it will finish in this December, like most other projects, before we then start the 2014-2020 EU funding programming period. And within Medjelerisk, we already delivered a lot. We had the smartphone app, for example. We delivered a large number of popular science publications for the public, most of which were published on waterproof paper so that people could take it to the beaches, including medical advice on how to treat jellyfish stings and so on. We organized seminars and so on. In fact, our unit is a partner in this project along with the Department of Biology. Now, within this project, two other exciting deliverables are on the radar. One of them has recently been vaccine launched, which is the anti-jellyfish net at Pretty Bay in Breeze Abuja, which we're currently monitoring to see how well it's performing and if there's any form of environmental impact that this net has, obviously. With the plan that even after major risk is over, these nets will be made available for anybody who wants to install them on our beaches, obviously against an environmental permit. And something else which should come on stream pretty soon is the launch of the jellyfish dispersion model, which has been quite an onerous feat. We've been working on it with a large number of experts, whereby if people actually spot a large jellyfish bloom, once the model starts running, the model will predict, will give a forecast for the next 3-4 days where that bloom will actually reach and which beaches will it hit.
According to water currents.
Water currents, wind. Yes, exactly. So it's according to physical oceanography parameters, because physical oceanography unit obviously runs its own models in the Malta Sicily Channel, which are valid through a number of ways, for example through another project, Calypso, led by Professor Aldo Drago, where our recent center installed these radars which monitor currents in the Malta Sicily Channel. So that's a good way of validating what the model is saying. So that's Magellan Risk. Then we are participating in a much larger project called Perseus, which is a pan-European, so something like 53 partners, 22 countries. It's a massive project coming to a close again this December. This deals with a particular EU directive on the sea, which is the Marine Strategy Framework Directive. It's a very onerous directive, so this project tries to come up with innovative tools through which member states can meet the obligations of this directive. In December, when the project comes to a close, a secondary school student will be chosen from all the countries, including Malta, and Perseus will pay for that student and one of his parents to go to Brussels at the closing event and deliver a speech at the European Parliament about the state of the seas and the challenges being faced by the seas in his or her own country. The moment we've launched a competition for these students along with the Malta National Aquarium to select the best student. And the third project I wanted to speak about is an Erasmus Plus project. So it's not mainly dealing with research, because Erasmus Plus is more on training, and it's called Sea of Skills. Sea of Skills deals with training of fishermen. We like to use the term fishers rather than fishermen, because there are women who are engaged as well in fishing. So the term to use is fishers. So it addresses this aspect. So at the moment we are conducting questionnaires with the local fishing community. The same is being done in Greece and in Turkey to actually identify the training needs of this community, because we don't actually want to go for the top-down approach where we impose what we think are the aspects where fishers need training. So people coming from university, going to the fishers, telling them, listen, you need training in this, this, and this.
No, I can't imagine that would go down very well anyway.
Exactly. So we first have to identify their needs by speaking to them one-to-one and so on. So this is a lengthy process, but we're getting there. Eventually, we'll come up with this training material in the form of a user-friendly manual in the respective languages, so it will be in Maltese, and there will be a multiplier and dissemination event where we bring together all the fishermen, we present it with the manual, with the main contents of the manual, and so on. So I think it's a very good initiative that we've got so much expertise at the university, and at the same time, fishers have so much expertise through anecdotal evidence and so on, that we combine these two to actually get something trickling down to the fishing community.
They find it also a good thing that it looks as though people are taking an interest in their profession, exactly, which they love.
Exactly.
And I suppose, I don't know whether it is it dying out? Are there more fishers, less fishers now?
At the moment, the numbers are small. When we speak of the fishing community in Malta, we're speaking about slightly more than 1,000 people. So extremely small. And of these, very few are full-timers. So we're speaking of a very small community. There was a period when the fishing community declined drastically. Now the decline has stabilized somewhat. The numbers have stabilized. They are not increasing, but at least there's still a few young people who are willing to take this as a full-time job. For me, it's a tricky situation because obviously I am associated with conservation of our resources and so on. And fishing obviously has an opposite effect. But at the same time, I appreciate the need to preserve the fishing community in Malta for a number of reasons. So we have social reasons, cultural reasons, and so on. I am all out for sustainable fishing, not for the dying out of the fishing industry. Industry for Malta doesn't, it's a misnomer, because we're obviously speaking of something which is artisanal. We don't have industrial fisheries here, it's small scale and so on. But yes, I think this is a win-win situation where you have academics talking to fishermen, to fishers.
That's a very important point. Let's move on to the next section that we thought we'd talk about, because they've now developed this department, or opened up this Department of Geosciences, which is something a bit new in the Faculty of Science. Perhaps you could sort of explain, you know, what's behind it.
Exactly. So the rationale behind the Department of Geosciences, the formation was, establishment was to bring together a number of resident academics within the Faculty of Science and bring them under one single umbrella. These academics obviously are doing a lot of valid work, which is closely related in a way, you know, so not necessarily related to the sea only, even though there's a strong element in that. For example, this Department of Geosciences will include the Physical Oceanography Research Group, of which I form part. Obviously, oceanography relates to the sea. There's a marine geologist like Dr. Aaron Mikhalev. There's people from the petroleum studies and so on. So, but then there's other elements which are not necessarily marine related. So units, research units or research groups dealing with atmospheric pollution and their pollution and so on, and seismology. So I think this unit is varied in its composition, even though obviously there is a common thread between all, us all. I think it will be an added bonus to the Faculty of Science having the Department of Geosciences on board, because we can offer now much more thematics to the ones already offered by other departments within the same faculty. In fact, we've drafted together, as all the academic members of this new department, we helped draft an updated list of thematics we could offer for example, to students wanting to take an MSc by research, a master's by research with our department. And the list is so vast. When you group together the expertise of all these academics within this new department, and you come up with the list of possible thematics we could offer a postgraduate course in, the list is, believe me, is extensive. So we're testing uncharted ground now. We're opening new opportunities for students wishing to go in applied sciences. So I think applied describes very well what we do. We do hard known science, but we do a lot of applications. If you look at physical oceanography, if you look at atmospheric pollution, seismology, you know, marine geology, petroleum studies, these are all applications which are ideal for postgraduate courses, even though most of us academics within this department teach also at undergraduate level.
I see it as well, correct me if I'm wrong, as an area where you're also joining forces and using common also equipment perhaps, or this sort of thing, where you're dovetailing together and utilizing resources in the most sustainable way, because obviously the university's finances are not infinite and you need to be together,
more
really
coherent, yes, a coherent force.
To make the best use out of it.
Exactly. Even when you're applying for a European project now, obviously having people within your same department with different expertise, obviously, it increases your chances, increases your choices, your options when it comes to deciding to join which consortium for a particular proposal and so on. So that's good. Obviously, there are a number of master's courses within this department already being offered. For example, our own research group offers, as of last October, we've started offering the Masters in Applied Oceanography, which is a one-year full-time course. And that's one of the major appeals of this course, that even though it's full-time, so candidates, participants cannot obviously work, they cannot have a full-time job, okay, but at least, you know that if you do your work, okay, you will graduate within 1 year. So this is also, besides that appeal, this makes it eligible for a number of Maltese government scholarships, like Master, for example. In fact, all our Maltese students within this Master's course this year were awarded the Master Maltese Government Scholarship,
which
is good.
Where would these students come from, the undergraduate background?
This is good, because this year, when we formulated the entry requirements for this master's course, we left it quite broad, because the course Masters in Applied Oceanography is so multidisciplinary that we're not looking for a particular set of expertise only, okay, of skills, because we are aware that all of the students will need to get training in the first semester, at least, and especially in the first semester, to, on certain aspects of which they haven't been trained before. So it has been opened to a large number of undergraduate courses. In fact, the students we got this year, we had a student who had graduated in earth systems, an engineer, we got an engineer, we got somebody from who is a biologist, BSc Chemistry and Biology. We got a foreign student who I believe is a physical oceanographer, and the other students from geography. So we had, you know, the full spectrum, basically. Mm-hmm. And again, this year, in promoting this course, we obviously touched base with the student organizations of all the departments and faculties we're targeting. So again, this year, and we've been approached as well by a number of students this year for the next uptake, hailing from different backgrounds, having different backgrounds. So, you know, and as I said, the challenging part of this course, but it's also the appealing part of this course, is the first semester, because students are exposed to biological, chemical, mathematical, physical, computational aspects, you know. So, so everybody will have his own niche, but will have, obviously, to expand and to learn new skills and so on. Mm-hmm. But, you know, all our students have made it so far. Now, in summertime, they're working on their thesis. It's a short thesis because this is a taught master, so it's one. The thesis counts for one-third of the total 90 ECTS. And their deadline is mid-September, so they're working throughout the summer, but they've gone through their exams successfully, you know, even though in the beginning some of them might have felt disheartened and so on, that they wouldn't have done it because perhaps they wouldn't have any grasp of computer programming, you know, and so on. But a lot of training is received during the course, you know, so in fact, when in the screening, we do a lot, the screening to accept participants is very rigorous. One of the few mandatory obligations that we put in is that students need to have at least an intermediate level in mathematics. In the case that there isn't, we don't say, we don't give them a blanket no answer. We say, listen, we recommend that you attend a number of mathematics classes. Okay, either in, ideally in summertime before you start, or if this is not possible, we tell them do it in parallel. Whilst you've started the course, you do it in parallel by attending at university a number of maths classes, and we're doing it this year. And then obviously we'll see if this works in January when there's the first examinations and so on, you know. But we, with this year's experience, we've realized, you know, that even people coming from non-mathematical backgrounds, like geography, earth systems and so on, they can still follow this course. You know, they can still, if they pull up their socks, you know, they can still do it.
Yes. I think I'm getting the feeling at least that this is a general, a new approach to accepting master's students. Yes. Before it was really, really rigid. Mm-hmm. If you did Italian, you had to do your master's in Italian. Now it's changing. The idea that the maturity that students come with after mm-hmm. 3 years can sometimes be enough mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. move them on to something different. Obviously, they need the basic, you're saying, exactly. Intermediate mathematics in this case.
Yes, but this is one of the requirements, basic requirements of the job market. Nowadays, and I feel this, I'm not old, but I can already feel the difference from the times when I was a student, that now there's a bigger emphasis on employability. When I was a student, we used to think about, obviously, job opportunities, what will I do when I finish from university. But it wasn't, you know, such a nagging thought at the back of my mind. Now I see students that, obviously, it's imperative. So the job market demands that you have people with multifarious skills, mm-hmm. so that they are very flexible, that they are dynamic, you know, that so I think this type of masters, you know, and in fact in the second semester, so the first semester we give them we bring everybody up to scratch where the science is involved, but the second semester we come up with the applications, so they are taught in things like EIAs, environment impact assessment, you know, hands-on approach, yeah? And within this master's there's even a boot camp. There's a 1 week long boot camp where the students are actually living in a particular area close to the sea. They wake up every morning and go out at sea on a boat. They use our instrumentation, and by the end of the week they have to come up with a presentation, with a report on after analyzing the data and so on. Mm-hmm.
Very much the world of work kind of
exactly, exactly. Because once you go out there, you might work with a consultancy company, for example, or an environmental authority, with MEPA, for example, or with water services, you know, and you'd need to do the test yourself to analyze the data. So it's very hands-on. And with one of our students, two of our students, I'm happy to say that even though they're still doing their thesis, two of our students have already found work. So, you know, from next October, if they, you know, they successfully complete this master's, they already, you know, they already had interviews for jobs, and they already mentioned the skills in their interviews, the skills they learned during this master's, and it served them to good stead, basically.
Exactly. As time is passing, I'm going to sort of push you on a little bit about,
yes.
I know that you have a training course, which is now in its 11th year.
Yes, exactly. That is a very good opportunity to mention. It's in the 11th year. This is the IOI International Ocean Governance course. Malta has always been very strong when it comes to ocean governance. Obviously, we had Arvid Pardo, 1967, with Common Heritage of Mankind, the UN. We have IMLI, you know. So when you come in at university, just in front of Gateway, you see these, you know, seminal figures, okay, and seminal institutions. So ocean governance, Malta is intrinsically linked. And that's why the IOI, the International Ocean Institute, has its headquarters in Malta and has been running this course now for the 11th year. Okay, and this is an international course, so it attracts students, participants, rather than students, we like to call them participants, because they are mid-career professionals. So we're looking at people working, for example, in their in ministries, in their countries, or in environmental authorities, or with policymakers, and so on. And this works on the regional seas approach, so we balance out the composition of our alumni from Caspian Sea, Baltic Sea, Black Sea, and Mediterranean. We try to get an even share from each of these seas. And then they have simulation exercise. They're trained in even negotiations and so on, okay, if between countries. So it's a very hands-on. It's held between November and December of each year. Applications are open. Out of these 20 students, normally mid-career professionals, we always have two or three hailing from Malta, from armed forces, for example, and so on. And applications online are already open, you know, and we've started receiving the first few ones for this. There are plans for this course in future. This is supported by university, even though it's held at university by IOI, it's supported by university, but there are plans to even improve and strengthen the accreditation of university in future. If we manage even from next year to have this being recognized as a diploma course.
And just a mention of the CLAS course, the Environmental Issues and Challenges. I think that is something that could be of interest to our listeners.
Exactly. It's good that you mentioned this. Yes, I've been involved now from the very outset of class, which I think is a very good idea, liberal arts and sciences, that you make education obviously available to everybody in a flexible way, you know. And yes, from this October, we're offering this study unit on the environment, environment issues and challenges. The environment is something which is at the heart of many Maltese people, if you see latest surveys and so on. And we're tackling the environment in a very holistic manner in this study unit. So tackling noise pollution, water pollution, air pollution, you know, urban areas, these famous ODZs, you know, public consultation. There's a lot in it. We've tried to cram in as much as possible within the 15 lectures. There is a lecture every week. It's a weekly lecture, and there will also be a field visit, you know, on a Saturday. But normally lectures are held between six and eight on a weekday. Obviously, for this course to be offered, there must be a minimum critical mass. So we need uptake, you know. So I encourage anybody who's listening to this program, who's obviously interested, to get in touch with class at university, okay? Even the website, we can give the website perhaps here, I think. www.um.edu.mt/class, CLAS, Center for Liberal Arts and Sciences, and to obviously download the brochure, which was mailed to all the households in Malta, and to go on the on the study unit which interests the person in question, you know. I think even the exponents, the lecturers who lecture within this, most of them are experts, are established, acclaimed experts. We'll have people like, for example, Alfred Baldacchino speaking about afforestation, Marco Cremona speaking about water pollution, you know. So Professor Asha speaking about water pollution again. So, you know, I think it's an interesting mix.
In the last few minutes that we have, perhaps we could mention a little bit about your personal research, your research that you're doing also in collaboration with others within the Faculty of Science.
Yes. At the moment, in fact, earlier this year, in fact, we had a student, when I say we, it's in collaboration with the Department of Biology. We have a student who has started her PhD on the impact on ecological aspects of microplastics. So microplastics is a thematic which at the moment is receiving a lot of attention worldwide, but especially in the EU. The EU Commission is funding a lot of programs which target microplastics. Since unfortunately microplastics are a insidious threat, not just to the health of, to ocean health, to the health of our seas and so on, but also to public health, because there are signs that microplastics accumulate in plankton, small fish and so on. They bioaccumulate up a food chain, and obviously they end up on our plates when we consume, you know, seafood and so on.
Put like that is not a very nice idea.
No, exactly. So, you know, there's a lot of interest, and we know relatively little about these microplastics. When we refer to microplastics, we're generally speaking about things which are smaller than 5 millimeters. So extremely small, okay, extremely small. And there are various sources of these microplastics. So we have this student who has embarked on this ambitious PhD, and we're trying, obviously, to together with the Department of Biology, to get involved in a number of EU funding projects to find funds for her PhD, but also, you know, to be able to offer similar projects. Other forms of research, so this is microplastics, things which are ongoing, obviously, is monitoring, long-term monitoring of water temperature, of sea temperature, to see if there's, you know, this warming up phenomenon, which we've been hinting at so often. Monitoring, continuous monitoring of jellyfish, obviously, jellyfish presence and so on the lookout for these new species of jellyfish through the Spot the Jellyfish boat, through the local campaign, which is Spot the Jellyfish, which is now in the sixth summer. This is a citizen science campaign, and we have people at our institute continuously monitoring the reports being sent by the public, replying to each one, you know, validating them to see from the photo if they identified it correctly, so that we have a database with the correct you know, information, and obviously downloading the satellite parameters to try to correlate the two, so to see if the jellyfish blooms are the result of particular conditions in the sea and so on. So I think, and then there are other aspects, so for example, we're involved as well in the genetics. We have a student, as well with Dr. Zamit Manjon, we have a student who is working on the genetics, for example, of the box jellyfish. So the box jellyfish is a jellyfish which is almost completely restricted to yacht marinas in Malta. So associated with high densities of boats, and the student is working on the genetics to see if different populations along the Maltese islands differ genetically, and if they are different, for example, from their counterparts in Tunisia, in Spain, in Italy, and so on. So there's plenty going on, you know, plenty going on. And,
it's tiring, you know, just listening to you.
Exactly. So obviously we try to make the best of summer, enjoying the beach and the sea, but at the same time, work has to continue.
Well, thank you very, very much, Professor Alan Deydoun, for coming on University Matters Campus FM today to talk about things marine. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the invitation.
You've been listening to University Matters on Campus FM. Do join me again next week. This is Patricia Camilleri saying goodbye.
Il-programm li għadkom kem smajtu kien miġjub lilkom bix-xewqa tajba ta' Farsons Foundation.